The Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show is coming up next, right here on the TJRS Radio Network online radio at its best.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network. Network.
WWE Superstar Big Show here to tell you, if you've been drinking, get a ride. Take a cab. Find another safe way to get home. Cops all across the country are cracking down on drunk driving. They will see you before you see them. Drive sober or get pulled over.
Online radio at its best. Online radio at its best.
If you're ready, map of the South.
Let's do this.
I'm telling you, I am first very honored that you would join me tonight.
He has a very limited time spot, so we want to bring in Mr. Alan Sarrow right away.
Hey, how are you, Kathleen?
You know what? I'm going to make you do what it do,
baby. Man, what's crack-a-lackin', baby? What's crack-a-lackin'?
It's time for the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show.
Don't try to call me out, Princess. You can take your love and true purpose and stick it. She's a bitch.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
To be a good father is the most important job in a man's life. But it doesn't have to be hard. Play catch. Go to a park or visit a zoo. Help your child with their homework. Sit down together for dinner. Ask them how their day was. Things get busy, and sometimes we all fall short. But the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today.
This week on The Serious Side.
Please be seated. Members of the jury, have you reached a verdict? If you'll please hold the verdict form and hand it to Deputy Jarvis. Okay, if you'll please publish the verdict. In the Circuit Court of the 18th Judicial Circuit in and for Seminole County, Florida, State of Florida versus George Zimmerman. Verdict, we the jury find George Zimmerman not guilty. So say we all four person.
Be either side 1-2, poll the jury.
We would, Your Honor.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, as your juror number is being called, please answer whether this is your verdict.
Juror B-29, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror B-76, is this your verdict? Yes. Juror B-37, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror B-51, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror E-6, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror E-40, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good morning and welcome to the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Good Sunday morning to you folks. Today is July 14th, 2013, and you're in tune to the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TJRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. I'm J. Ryle. Of course, I never share the stage by myself. We have some people in that we definitely want to introduce. Let me introduce you to the man first who gets the first and last word here on the Serious Side, the one and only Mr. Elias, who runs everything around here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Doing great this morning. Well, I'm not doing great this morning. I'm lying to you. It's just a figure of speech. Trust me, I'm not doing well at all this morning. Also want to introduce to you from the J. King Network. He's the host of Kings in the Morning and the music business the way I see it. Let's say good morning to the one and only J. King. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Not doing good. It's not a good day if you're an African American here in the United States of America. But as you can tell by the marquee, this morning's show is dedicated to the results of the Trayvon Martin case, or should I say the George Zimmerman case. By now, you all know that George Zimmerman was found not guilty in a court of law. And even though people say we have to respect the verdict, we don't have to like the verdict. It's a sad day in America when a teenager can go to a convenience store, buy some tea and some candy, and all of a sudden he loses his life within a 30-minute window. And so we're going to talk about this today. And the thing that we're going to also do during the last set of the show, we're going to allow you to give your closing arguments. If you want to call in, we'll give you 5 minutes to give closing arguments, because a lot of us feel that the prosecution did not do a very good job of representing this case. Now, there are some people that say that they didn't want to win the case. So we'll talk about all that this morning, and let's just get into the conversation. Let me start with you, Ms. Elias. First of all, I just want to take the temperature, man. Your thoughts after hearing that verdict last night?
Well, you know, some Jay, I wasn't surprised at the verdict. I wasn't surprised at all. We were on the phone when they read the verdict, and I wasn't surprised. I was angered at the verdict, and I was angered at the prosecution. You know, let's just be honest. After the verdict, you could tell that the state's attorney was very jovial and happy. I've never seen anybody that lost a case that was jovial and happy. So to me, they didn't want to win this case. You can say that I'm wrong in an explanation of it, but to me, the case they put on, to me, they didn't want to win.
Interesting. Let me go to you, Jay King. What are your thoughts?
First of all, I said this from the very beginning. The prosecution, they never wanted to prosecute this case. You know, we were one of the first people on top of this thing, calling the city of Orange, the Sanford Police Department, the state attorney general's office. We said we weren't going to stop until they arrested this guy. We were on the case early, and what I recognized then, as I recognized yesterday, and you are absolutely correct. I noticed that also, Mr. Elias, was the state attorney. She was just excited. It was almost like, yeah, we won. You know, the due process happened. We found out the truth. You know, this guy was innocent. You know, let's carry on. But I wasn't surprised, and I said it already. I said it early on that he was going to be acquitted. I always believed the prosecution did a half-assed presentation of the case. They didn't prepare their witnesses properly because they didn't care. They didn't try to win this case, and that's why second-degree murder was the charge. You know, but if you're going to do a second-degree murder charge, and today in my opening statement, I mean in my closing remarks, you're going to hear, you know, because they use second-degree murder, I used second-degree murder, and I still thought that it was provable. It was just a tougher proof, burden of proof, but they could have proven it had they taken another avenue. But again, I never believed they wanted to win this case.
Yeah, you know, and they're speaking of the state attorney, we're talking about Angela Query. She actually, here are some of her comments that she made immediately after the trial. And once again, the audio is not going to give it justice. You really had to see the visual as well. But here's a portion of what she said.
We also promised that we would seek the truth for Trayvon Martin and due process for George Zimmerman, that we would get all of the facts and details of this very difficult case before a jury, and that we chose to do it that way because we felt that everyone had a right to know everything about this case. That for a case like this to come out in bits and pieces serves no good to no one. As Mr. Guy told the jury yesterday, to the living we owe respect, to the dead we owe the truth. We have been respectful to the living. We have done our best to assure due process to all involved. And we believe that we brought out the truth on behalf of Trayvon Martin. There are so many people to thank, starting with Sheriff Esslinger and his entire sheriff's office. They've been so good to us, as has Michelle Kennedy and all of the people here. As you know, we traveled from our own circuit to be here, and that has not been easy. But it's been made so much the better by having so many people be gracious. You have respected our privacy, you, the media, because we said after the press conference that we were going to try this case in the courtroom, not in the media.
You know, so now, you know, listen, once again, the audio really doesn't do it justice, but I think you're right, Ms. Elias. The thing that you and I were on the actual phone talking when all this stuff transpired, and it just seems to me she was very jovial. I think the first thing, I've never seen this, and, you know, I definitely want your comments on this. I've never seen a prosecutor or any attorney who loses a case, and the first things that come out of their mouth is, we are so thankful, instead of saying, you know what, we are disappointed that we lost this case. And listen, and I'm not a believer that they did it on purpose, but let me just say this, that they didn't help the cause. Because if you had that in your mind that they really didn't want to try this case, then she gave you all the information or all the food you needed to justify that by her closing comments. Your thoughts, Mr. Elias?
I agree wholeheartedly, man. I mean, I've never seen she never came out and said to the Martin family, the first words out of my mouth said to the Martin family, we failed you. We apologize to you. No, she just said, well, you know, hey. And she smiled and it was like, I looked at this woman, it's like, my God, you can't be more happier that this case ended the way it did. And I thought to myself, this is a load of crap. Honestly, I couldn't believe that she put herself out there like that. To just walk around with a big smile on her face, and this young kid has lost his life. This family doesn't have a son anymore because, you know, you put on a crappy case. If you didn't put your best foot forward, even the prosecutor said, the first words out of his mouth was, "We apologize to the Martin family." Not her. She just, you know, went on like life is still good.
Yeah, and, you know, Jay King, and like we said before, and you've been saying this for months now on Kings in the Morning and on other shows that you've appeared on, that it was a situation where, once again, the facts were there, but as far as the way it was handled, the way it was prosecuted, mistakes and flaws everywhere.
Yeah, and you guys got to remember that this guy's father is a judge. You know,
yes.
He's an ex-judge. He's sitting in the audience. We don't know what kind of, we don't know what kind of sway he has in that courtroom. We don't know what kind of relationship he has in that system with the prosecutor and the defense. But, you know, if you don't think that he has something to do with this, this guy, he's been acquitted in three other cases, George Zimmerman. And his father had something to do with it.
Interesting.
You know, it lets me know that, you know, the only way we're going to get justice in this country is if we do something to make ourselves felt, heard, and we let it be known that we aren't going to just take this kind of, this kind of verdict in 2013. The way we've done in the past, and I implore everybody, starting today, to just stop. Don't do nothing. Don't go buy nothing. Don't go to no movie theater. Don't buy gas. Don't shop. Don't go to a restaurant. Don't do nothing. Let's just stop for 48 hours. Miss a day of work. Let's stop for 48 hours and watch the power that our dollar has. We're the biggest consumer in this country. African American, the number one consumer in this country. Our dollar is power. And that's the only thing they understand.
347-850-1272 is our call-in number. 347-850-1272. It's the Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. We encourage you to call in during the last segment of the show. We are allowing our callers to call in and give their closing arguments, because a lot of people are saying that the prosecutors, you know, they botched this case. And so we are going to allow you, all right, 5 minutes to call in and tell us or give us your closing arguments, because, you know, believe it or not, some of those people may even actually hear this show. I mean, this show is broadcast all over the Internet. You never know who's listening. And the bottom line is that even though, Mr. Elias, you know, they may have won this battle, the war's not over. I mean, George Zimmerman, this is not over by a long shot, Mr. Elias. Did we lose Mr. Elias?
No, I'm still here, man. I'm really disgusted right now because in the court of law, man, you know, Richard Pryor said it best. It ain't justice. It's just us. You know, it's disappointing and disheartening, man, that we, you know, that a young man without a gun, that was unarmed. It's dead now, and this man was found innocent on all charges, man. I mean, it's just crazy, you know. I mean, of course they can get him with a federal charge, you know, and they can get him civilly, man. But I mean, look, man, the court is supposed to be, you know, a just place. You know, we're supposed to be judged by a jury of our peers. Was it a jury of our peers or? You know, man, like I said, man, everything, the way the prosecutor put this case down was garbage. It had me at times, I just turned the TV off and walked away from it because I was disheartened. I knew what the verdict was going to be. I knew it.
And you talk about the prosecution, and, you know, there were certain things that I thought they left on the table, things that I know that all of us during our closing arguments will definitely be able to address. Now, and I, I've had some people, you know, send messages saying, oh, it's easy to argue it after the fact. No. I mean, one of the things that I was saying, especially when the bald-headed guy stood up and gave his closing arguments, I thought it was flat. I thought the guy did not hit any of the points. You know, it was almost like some type of lecture session, I should say. And the thing that I saw, and one of the attorneys on MSNBC notices, they said, you know, this guy's asking all these questions, light-skinned. This guy is asking questions instead of giving you the answers to questions. He's saying, well, what do you think about this, huh? You know the answer to it. Well, listen, all they have to do is raise reasonable doubt. If you're not going to tell them what the answer is, then you're opening up the opportunity for them to draw those types of conclusions and thoughts.
Right. Yeah, I mean, again, I never thought that they wanted to win. I know you said you don't think they lost it on purpose. That sounds like purpose to me. I'm sorry, Dart. I mean, Jay. That just sounds like they didn't want to do this. Like they said, you know what? We got to do it. If we're going to do it our way, you know, and we're going to try this case the way we want to, and we're going to appease the black community. We're going to charge it with second degree murder. We're not going to make manslaughter an option. The judge made manslaughter an option, but you know, so because if you make manslaughter an option, you try the case as a second degree murder case, but you try to the second degree murder case, understanding that you can get. Manslaughter charge, and you make sure that you put those key points in for manslaughter. And they didn't do any of that stuff. So the consideration didn't come until at the end. All games, and they did exactly what they wanted to do.
Yeah, and the thing is that we also talk about representation and things of that nature. You know, Mr. Elias, let's go back to this jury here. This jury was six women, okay? Five of the women were white. All right, and the other person, which I can't believe in this day and age, we can't determine what this person's race is, but they said a person non-white was a part of this thing. First of all, the thought of just having six jurors, I've never seen a situation where you only had six jurors in a murder case. Have you?
No, I always thought it was, you know, we used to always have a statement, judged by six, carried by six. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've never seen that, but hey, you know what, man? I gotta agree with Jay King wholeheartedly. They half-assed this case. I mean, you know, to me from the very beginning, you know, any trial that you go through, even at the lightest trial, they don't even throw one charge at you. They throw charge after charge after charge after charge at you, so that if that one fails, this one will stick. If that one fails, this one will stick. They didn't put up a correct fight to me, man. They just half-assed it from the very beginning. You know, they did not put forth their best effort with, I mean, 100% agreement with Jay King, They did not want to win this case. They didn't, because if they did, they'd have put their best foot forward and charged him with more than murder, too.
And some of the comments that the defense team, especially Mark O'Meara, the comments he made when they asked him if the situations were reversed, Jay, and he said that, well, if this was the reverse situation, Trayvon Martin would have never been charged. I mean, it was offensive. And I'm saying to myself, you know, listen, God bless white folks, okay? But they just don't understand what's going on. And that's why I think that the fact that you didn't have one African-American on that jury, it says a lot. Now, keep in mind now, you know, a jury is a representation of its community. And I think the percentages in Sanford is 87% white. But to sit here to tell me that you could not find one African-American to sit on that jury, not one. In that whole city, it's preposterous to me.
But you tell me that a prosecution isn't going to raise a red flag on that. The prosecution isn't going to stump up and down and make that. Come on, man. The prosecution is anything. They said, you know, we got who we wanted. They helped pick this jury, so they got what they wanted. You know, this is you know, game plan at its finest. But you know, we have to stop being so emotional about this stuff, and we have to become strategic thinkers when it comes to this. This is business. Life is business, and we have to start looking at the business of life differently. As a community, we can't drive it with just our emotions and get mad and yell and scream and you know, and I ain't gonna do this. No, we gotta listen. White folk understand money.
Mm-hmm.
You start fooling with their money. They've proven that they'll kill their own mama for the money. And we have to hit them where it hurts. We got to make them know that. Okay, you know what? Well, you don't get to get my money. I'm gonna spend elsewhere. You know, maybe this is how we will start building black businesses. Maybe this is how we will start building community businesses. But all they did for me, you know, Mark O'Meara, I loved him for doing his job. He did his job better than the prosecution did theirs. You know, he defended his client. He put reasonable doubt in the minds of the jury, and he won. And he and that's what this is. This is a battle. Somebody's gonna win and somebody's gonna lose. He won. The prosecution lost because they didn't present the case properly, efficiently, effectively, and with passion. And with vigor, they didn't present this case the way. And here we are, just laymen. And we have 10 minutes or 5 minutes to do a closing argument. And I bet you some of the things that you'll find in some of these closing arguments are going to be more compelling than what you find what you would have found in the prosecution. I mean, it was horrible. It was like he got up in the morning and just started jotting things down. It was just, it was disjointed, no passion, nothing that I felt like made me believe that this guy should be in jail.
Well, 347-850-1272 is our calling number, 347-850-1272. It's the Serious Side of the Jay Ryle Show. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. We're talking about the results of the verdict of the George Zimmerman file. You know, Mr. Elias, one of the things that this reminded me of was a situation that happened back in 2010 with a man by the name of John H. White. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that story, but he was convicted. He was found guilty of second-degree manslaughter charges when he shot an unarmed white kid outside of his house in August of 2006. Now, the story goes is that the young man was drunk. Him and some friends, the guy who got shot eventually, his name was Daniel, I think Cicero, I think that's his name. Anyway, they left the party. They showed up at this guy's house, Mr. White's house, right after 11 o'clock and challenged his son, who was then 19 at the time, to a fight. They used threats, they used profanity, they call him all these racial epithets. And so what Mr. White did, he woke up, he heard it, he grabbed his Beretta, he went outside, and he shot this kid. And he was found guilty of second-degree manslaughter. So, I mean, I know there are some different things here that we can say, well, but, you know, bottom line is Mr. White wasn't in the fight, but, you know, he felt that his son was threatened. You know, so to sit here and say, and, you know, of course, it's New York, and I understand that, so the laws may be different in New York, but I guess my point is this is the reason why, Ms. Elias, African-Americans are always saying this is about race, because when you sit back and take a look at some things that are very similar, how can the laws be so different in one state than another? I mean, it's crazy, Ms. Elias.
Yeah,
what's your thought?
Well, you know, Jay, in Florida, the laws are going to be different. Because in Florida, I mean, they, you know, to me, they don't have respect for race at all. I mean, if you think about the Voting Rights Act and everything that they've been through there, I mean, you look at all these things and you combine all these things together, man, and they definitely go after the race. So, hey, man, I don't know. Jay King, I know you had something to say.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that, you know, there's also a case in Florida, Jay, where a black man killed a white guy using the Stand Your Ground law, and he didn't get convicted. And, you know, I think there's a flaw in the law itself.
Right.
So, you know, and that's why, you know, I didn't think it was about race. And I didn't want them to make it about race initially. I wanted them to be able to fall back on that the way I understand the Obama administration is doing now by filing federal charges against him, you know, for violating Trayvon's rights, his civil rights.
Right, right.
But
And you're right about that.
You know, so... I didn't think it was color related. I thought it was, you know, he was profiling young people. I don't think he hates black people, and you know, like people think. I don't believe that. I believe that he was doing what he thought was protecting his neighborhood, and that's fine. But you know, when you make a mistake, when you overstep your bounds, you got to pay the price. This guy should be paying a price right now. At least he should be serving 15 years in prison for manslaughter. And he's not. And, you know, and it just goes to show you, because each of these states, you guys, I think a lot of us don't realize is that, you know, in every state is like is like its own country. They have laws in California that you have in Texas. You have laws in Texas that you don't have in Florida. You know, and so I can't take the laws of California and try to apply them in Florida. And that's why it's important that once you get involved in this stuff, once you get involved in these types of cases, that you start to read the law, understand what the law is. You know, so to me, they didn't, you know, what was essential for a second-degree murder case is to prove that the defendant had a depraved mind. And that's what they didn't do. And there were ways they could have, you know, even if it was temporarily depraved, you could have really proven that this guy had a depraved mind. It's a stretch. You know, but when you start looking at, manslaughter and, you know, in the state of Florida, the definition is a little more in line with what we're talking about here, because manslaughter says that if death is called to somebody due to reckless regard of human life, that a person may not have intended for anybody to die, but they didn't care if they caused the situation when someone died.
Yeah.
And that someone did in fact die, you know. So I believe that the manslaughter would have been a better charge for this case. And I think had they prepared this, and again, it goes back to, did they really want to win the case, or did they just want to put up a good show for the American public, especially the African-American community?
That's a good point to make. All right, folks, so we're going to step out, take a break. It's time for us to go somewhere, wash your hands, take a break, take a deep breather. Coming up on the other side, we're going to continue this argument. Remember, you can call in and give your closing arguments during the last segment of the show. Plus, our main man, Jerome Esprit, is here. We'll hear from him next. It's the Serious Side. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is your resident map of the South, Moms and Little Donnas, kickstarting your weekend every Friday with Ladies First Radio, the Gay Rouse Show, a show for women, by women. Tune in every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as my co-host, Princess Odelia, and I discuss everyday issues and offer inspirational solutions. From the East Coast to the West Coast to all over the world, Ladies First Radio keeps it real, spreading positivity one show at a time. So come be uplifted with Ladies First Radio, the J-Rouse Show. Every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Ladies First Radio, the J-Rouse Show. A show for women, by women.
discouraged, down in despair, like no one loves you and no one cares. But there's a melody from heaven that'll set you free. Just look up to the Father. Say, rain down on me.
Just found out about the Zimmerman verdict. Of course, not guilty. Now, we have a jury system. We got to trust it. They saw every minute of the trial. And remember, you got to prove him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. It doesn't mean he's innocent. It just means he's not guilty by law. But I feel one thing overwhelmingly today: unsafe. This gives gun owners an enormous advantage. The NRA must be ecstatic. They can pick a fight with anybody, and if you fight back, they can execute you, especially in the state of Florida. And if we feel unsafe, think about how a black family feels tonight. What if their son is out tonight? It makes me sick thinking about it. No justice. Young Turks.
It's 35 minutes after the hour. You're in tune to the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network. Online radio at its best. Our calling number is 347-850-1272. 347-850-1272. You can be a part of the conversation. And don't forget, during the last segment of the show, we're going to allow you 5 minutes, if you decide, if you'd like to call in and give your closing arguments. And people here on the show can actually have 10. Speaking of people here on the show, let me introduce them to you once again. Let's say good morning to the one and only Mr. Elias. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing?
Doing great, Mr. Elias. And let's say good morning for the first time to our political strategist, Jerome Esprit. Good morning, Jerome.
Hey, good morning, Jay.
And last but certainly not least, the man who is in charge of the J. King Network and a very dear friend of mine, Jay King, from Kings in the Morning and the music business, the way I see it. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, and also just the way I see it on Sundays.
And the way I see it on Sundays, absolutely.
You're going to be on the show today, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. We are. We're going to definitely, we're going to announce that too. We want people to show up to that show because we're going to talk about all that. That's coming up. We're definitely going to announce that, and that's right. That's coming up this afternoon because I think that we need to continue to have these types of conversations. So, Jerome, I know this is your first time talking to the audience this morning. Let me just get your thoughts first. What are you thinking this morning, sir?
I don't know what to think. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of like everyone else really on this. I have the default to what I thought before the verdict. And before the verdict, I believed that a jury that wasn't reflective of any diversity was not going to be positive for the black person in any particular case. Historically, it just doesn't really work that way. So I have to default back to that, but it just seems very odd that the people would, there are some people who are celebrating the verdict like Zimmerman was not guilty. Like the issue was he killed them. And I think we need to stay focused on a grown man getting out of a car kills a kid who was walking from the store. I think that's where it begins and ends for me. All of that stuff in between doesn't really work for me because all of it's speculative and, you know, Zimmerman didn't swear under oath to anything, so everybody has statements from his account, which was all skewed by them wanting him to be a certain way. So I can't take any of that stuff as gospel. Nobody else should. It just did not make sense from the time that he said somebody's following me to the fact that he must have walked backwards to the street to that car. It doesn't make sense. So when you use your common sense, yes, it strikes a nerve with everyone to know that someone can have a way out by painting a picture, whether they're lying or not. And knowing that your defense attorneys, your district attorneys, your prosecutors, they're not held by the same standard in court to tell the truth either. Can't prosecute any of those guys for lying or making up scenarios. They can do it, and that's a part of how the justice system works.
Jay King, I think you wanted to get in there. You have a comment?
I wanted to say, didn't you guys find it interesting that the prosecution would introduce, on its side of the case, a lot of the audio and video statements that George Zimmerman made to the police, you know, after Trayvon Martin was killed, when those statements clearly couldn't have been used by the defense. The statements were hearsay. The only way they can be used by the defense is if the prosecution introduces them. And those statements all spoke to George Zimmerman making his case for self-defense. So I don't understand why the prosecution would open the door and allow the defense to use the very tapes that any other prosecutor would have said, I don't want this as part of the evidence because this is hearsay.
But the reason why I think they did it, because I go back to, once again, I think the prosecution blowing the case, because you go back and look, and I watched a lot of this, Mr. Elias, if you go back and look at a lot of the statements that George Zimmerman was saying, he was lying. He was getting caught in lies. He got caught on a lie on the Hannity TV show. So, you know, the thing is that information should have been used to the good. I think what they did was they left it open for interpretation. They did not, in my opinion, Mr. Elias, you correct me if I'm wrong on this, they did not tie the damn knots. They did not connect the pieces because all the pieces were there. It's like they walked to a table, there was a puzzle sitting out there, they put together some of it, and they didn't finish it. And because those statements, and that's one of the things I'm going to make in my closing arguments, if you go back and listen to what George Zimmerman said, George Zimmerman, he convicted himself. And the bottom line is that the prosecution could not take it home. He gave them what they needed. There's no way that someone can, and I don't want to, it's a spoiler alert, because this is a part of my argument, but we got to have this conversation until then. There's no way you're going to take somebody's head and pound it against the concrete 25 times, and this person's either going to get up and live to tell about it, and not be confused. Stop it.
They already established that they weren't even on the concrete as well. I mean, they were actually on the grass. So using concrete as argument was just wrong.
Exactly. But he said to the police and on TV that they took his head and Trayvon bashed his head 25 times. Are you serious? So the information was there. The information was there. The prosecution dropped the ball. Period.
But under normal circumstances, the prosecution, Jay, would not allow such hearsay unless they had evidence to refute every claim. And if the prosecution has evidence to refute, but then they didn't present it. Because if you listen to those tapes, there's a number of self-serving references to previous break-ins, that they needed to start the neighborhood watch program, how Trayvon fled into a darkened area and disappeared between houses, how Zimmerman dropped his phone, he got punched in the face by Martin, his head got slammed. These are all things that could not have been brought into the defense if the prosecution hadn't opened the door, because it's all hearsay. All those things couldn't have been brought in, is what I'm saying. It opened up the door too wide for them to have too much of a general conversation. And the prosecutors know this. And this is prosecution 101. They know this. Unless you have something that's a drop-dead knockout against the audio or visual statement that's going to be made, and you know it's a hearsay statement, you don't introduce it to the court. It's too general. There's too much that can happen.
Yeah, but you know what, though? And let me push you on that, and then I want to get to the phone lines. Because, okay, the one thing is, you're right about that. But here's the deal. Bottom line is, there was evidence that showed that none of George Zimmerman's DNA was found on Trayvon. So you let this guy come out and say, hey, he held his hands over my face and all this other stuff, because the evidence says it didn't happen. So what we're trying to do is establish that this guy is a freaking liar. Okay? So, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but the bottom line is that they dropped the ball on this case. They had the evidence that they needed. They did not execute this case properly. Let's get out to the phone lines. Mr. Elias, who do we have on the line?
We have Anna Redding calling in, Jay.
Good morning, Anna. Welcome to the Serious Hour. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
Good morning, ma'am. What's your thoughts?
My thoughts are, and pardon my French and every other language, he's full of shit. The fact that he lied on the witness stand, the fact that he positioned the body, he actually tampered with the body, the fact that the prosecution didn't explore more as far as this case is concerned, it's bullshit. But like I said, the South will always be the South, and injustice is injustice. The problem I have is, you know, everybody is talking about riot and talking about doing this. What are you going to do besides riot that's going to change the impression of how blacks are viewed now? You know, what are you going to do? You know, he's on the stand basically. Like you said, it was either you or Jay said, he was basically giving them everything they needed to put his ass away. But then you have to look at the makeup of the jury. You had, what, 5 white women, 1 Latino? So he was tried by a jury of his, quote-unquote, peers. And obviously his peers let him off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely correct about that. Thank you so much for calling in. You know, let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that when we go back and look at some of the case, okay, you know, bottom line is, and Jerome, let me go to you on this. You know, we talk about how there were so many different things that the prosecution left on the table. One of the things that they allowed to happen was, successfully, they allowed the defense to paint Trayvon Martin as a thug. Successfully. Because, you know, every time they talked about Trayvon in this case, they didn't hold up the football picture. They didn't hold up the picture of him sitting on a horse. They didn't hold up the skiing pictures. They held up pictures of him standing up, you know, this towering black thug standing over you with his middle fingers up. They showed pictures of him. You know, you saw pictures of Trayvon smoking weed and all this other nonsense. They were able to successfully plant that seed. And I thought that the prosecution, once again, they just got outflanked in this case. And the bad and sad thing about this whole thing, Jerome, is the fact that, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of the outcome of the trial, Trayvon Martin wasn't coming back. But at the end of the day, they did so much disservice to not only to their office, but to, I would like to think, African people all over the world, because I'm reading trash from people from other countries saying, I'm glad I don't live in that racist-ass country, America. Time's yours, Jerome.
Yeah, you know, and I can tell you, we have things that highlight the climate in this country. I mean, if you didn't see that from the long voting lines and from the, you know, 2000 election with George Bush in Florida and all this disenfranchised stuff, you don't, we just keep getting these blips on the screen about how systemic some of those issues are. And when you talk about generally a jury of your peers, I'd like to remind you that just because somebody speaks Spanish or is Hispanic don't mean they're not white. And so if we want to talk about the difference between the white Cubans who left Cuba and the black Cubans who are there, we can talk about race if you like, but I can tell you that doesn't excuse all of the racial problems that they were having in Sanford to begin with, which led to the police not ever arresting him anyway and giving him the benefit of doubt and letting him go and saying, we have nothing here. So you take a jury of Zimmerman's peers, of course, that might work out in his benefit. But I wouldn't hang this moniker on a jury of Trayvon Martin's peers, not at all. And so I think we lose sight sometimes of understanding that there are cultural differences when it really comes to black and white. And for all the black people who say, you know, we're all the same and we should be, that's never going to be the case. And I'll give you one point to this. Everybody who, well, those of us who grew up in black communities, everybody knows that if you're getting followed home, you do not go straight home. It's just not what we do. The fact is that he had a 12-year-old brother home, and he's not going to let some 28-year-old who he could have suspected to be a pedophile of anything. You don't lead them to your house and then hide up under your bed. That's only in the movies. What you do is you try to shake them before you get home. So a lot of the calls on this, you know, I was doing traditional radio earlier, and all the Fox listener callers that called in, they were hanging their hat on what Trayvon Martin should have been doing. But I tell you this, he was doing it. He was walking home, and some man approached him, a grown man approached him, and he got shot. So run that through your mind backwards to say if a black kid gets out of the car and shoots a white man, how that's going to work out for you. Are you going to want to hear the details about how this happened?
Yeah, exactly. It's 10 before the hour. It's the Serious Side of the J-Rouse Show. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network. Online radio at its best. Our call in number is 347-850-1272. 347-850-1272. We encourage you to call in, be a part of the conversation. Obviously, we're discussing the verdict in the George Zimmerman trial. He was found not guilty. And so the only thing here, the only person that was found guilty in this trial was Trayvon Martin, because I think they did a hell of a job of portraying him as a thug. And we'll talk about some other things a little later, because I don't think Trayvon Martin helped his thoughts or helped his cause either. And you people may think that's a crazy statement, but I'll make it. But still, let's get out to the lines, man. Who else do we have? Do we have a phone call?
Yeah, we have Emilio on the line, Jay.
Morning, Emilio. Welcome to the Serious Side. What's your thoughts? Where are you calling from, Emilio, first of all?
Man, I'm in Laurel, Maryland. How you doing this morning, brother?
What's going on, brother? How you doing? Your thoughts?
I'm just going to throw some out there, and it's probably going to cause a little bit of controversy, but I'm not taking any other side, either side. But as a young man, I'm just laying it down as a young man. I remember on one cold night when I came home, because I had the pistol in my pocket, and I remember hanging out with a couple other friends at the liquor store, and an older guy approached me, and I don't know how he knew I had the gun in my pocket, but he grabbed the gun. And the struggle went on between me and one of my partners, and then my partner finally got the pistol out of his hand, out of the hand from the struggle, backed off of the guy, told him, man, let my boy go, and then the guy approached him and shot him. This guy died 35 minutes, just all black on black. So I came home that night, didn't say nothing about it. My mom and them was listening to the news. This was 40-something years ago. My mom and them was listening to the news. And then all of a sudden, the next night, they come and arrest me in connection with the fatal shooting. Of course, Mom didn't think of anything, and we told Mom. Second incident, 17 years old, I was with my partners, and we was coming home that particular night. I had my football cleats on. We were standing in front of God's store. And for some reason, I don't know what it was, man. I was trying to showboat in front of my friends, so I reached for my cleats like, I'm going to hit him. Well, the guy had an iron pipe in his hand. He busted me in my head, put a welt, big scar on my head. Started bleeding. I ran home. Of course, I told Mom and them that he did it. All my partners told. My brother went up to shoot the guy. And what I'm saying is, the only person that really know what really happened was the two people that were there. And I'm not trying to say that there's no injustice or anything here, but the fact of the matter is that the rioting, the looting, the injustice, the intoleration that people keep laying down is not going to bring the child back. It's not going to shift and change what we're doing. There's a lot of scapegoat going on. I'm just trying to feel the way through this in terms of how people are looking at a broader side of this picture and dealing with a law that they also sitting behind, that they vote people in. Where does the responsibility come? I'm telling my grandson, who's now coming up, well, you got to be able to function in society in this world. So you can call it racist, you can call it ageist, you can call it whatever you want to call it. But to what responsibility do we have of helping our kids navigate through this society, this country?
That's a good point. That's a good point, man. And we definitely appreciate you calling in, Emilio. Good point. Looks like we have Dr. Princess up there with us. Dr. Princess, up there, your thoughts.
I just want to say something, too. As I was listening to the caller and the incident in which he was speaking, he indicated that they were of the urban community as well. It was black on black. And I just want to say something as just a notice that something that I pay notice to, and I know many others probably do as well. When there is a situation of white on black, we scream, we yell, we'll call in a National Guard on it. But when it's black on black, we're not making this big of a deal. We're not trying to prosecute the person, whether you know, unless they're white like this.
That prosecution is happening automatically. We don't have to make that fight. They make that fight. They get two for the price of one. So. So that's the deal. We don't have to make that fight. Number one. Number two, I'm tired of hearing about black-on-black crime, because most crimes that take place in communities take place against people in and from those communities. Crimes against people of color happen against people of color in all nationalities. Asians commit crimes against Asians the majority of the time. Mexicans, Latins commit crimes against Latins most of the time. Whites commit crimes against whites most of the time, and blacks commit crimes against blacks most of the time, because it's the community you're most familiar with, it's the people you're most familiar with. So I get tired of hearing us use the black on black crime scenario, because the crimes take place, and the reason why the crimes that take place outside of a community, whether it was a black man killing a white kid or a Latin kid or Asian, whatever, when it's outside of the community, it's an issue because it doesn't happen so often. So when it does, it makes a big deal. So, you know, we have to recognize that. I want to say to the young man who spoke, you know, Jay, you and I have had this conversation before, and I've said several times, you know, and it makes people mad, but I've said it several times that young black males have a chip on their shoulder, and we, even in our community, certain kids we won't fool with, because we say, nah, you know what, they hard-headed, I don't want to have no problem with them kids, you know, or, you know, they ain't going to listen. We know that. We know that these things permeate and they persist. They're not going to tell us the truth. These kids are going to, they're not going to tell us the absolute truth of what they're really doing. And we got to take that into consideration, you know. And I say this, had Trayvon Martin, and again, I'm not trying to, you know, Trayvon Martin is an innocent victim here. But
yeah,
it would have been great if this situation had come up and Trayvon Martin just said, yes, sir. No, sir, I live over there, sir. You know, sir, who are you, sir? You know, and, you know, as opposed to the altercation. And again, we're speculative because we weren't there. We don't know if that happened or not. But I know that
right.
In our community, we know that young African-American men, not just men, but even the women, are becoming more and more aggressive and violent. And even in our community, we talk about it, but only in a whisper and only amongst our friends. When everybody else becomes involved, we run from the conversation. We don't want to have it. We have to start being honest about the state of our community, period.
Yeah, and you're right. And it's a situation where people will, you know, and we're going to definitely get into that too, because I think that there are some things that we can explore around those topics. Because, you know, we say it all the time that we really need to have an honest conversation, and I know sometimes we even get into it here on the show about, you know, some of the things that we may or may not do or say. So we're going to definitely explore that. Once again, you're listening to The Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show, 347-850-1272. We'll be back. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more on this. And don't forget now, if you want to participate, coming up in the last set, we'll give you 5 minutes to give your closing arguments. It's Sunday, and this is a good one. We'll be right back.
This is a test.
As we jump into the second set with laughter, a hearty laughter from Toxic Style. Welcome back in, folks. 347-850-1272.
It's still for women, by women. It's your resident, not for the South, my little daughter.
Good Sunday morning to you, folks, and welcome into the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Cafe. Powerhouse Sports Talk
Radio. Welcome back. You are tuning in to the True Purpose Development Show tonight.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network. Oh,
makes me do right when I would do wrong. When I'm down low, he gives me strong love.
Be realistic. We know who had the injuries. We know who didn't. It was a sad and tragic affair, but Trayvon Martin did in fact cause his own death, and this man should not face a jury any longer than he has already.
It's 4 minutes after the hour. You're in tune to the serious side of the J. Rao Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our call-in number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. We ask that you call in. You can make it short. Tell us what your name, tell us your name, obviously, where you're calling from. And, you know, please, I know people are, you know, really upset behind this, and but we ask folks to, you know, use discretion and make sure that when you do call in, you know, be respectful and, you know, and obviously and do all those types of things. Let me say good morning to the panel once again for the last time this morning. Let's say good morning to the one and only Dr. Prince's Idea. Good morning. How are you?
I am doing very well. Good morning, Jay. Good morning, everyone.
So I also say good morning to the one and only Jerome Esprit from EspritRadio.net. Jerome, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Once again, the man who gets the first and last word here on the Sirius side, Mr. Elias, good morning to you.
Good morning, everyone.
And, of course, one of our dear friends, a special guest, he's always home when he comes to this network, the one and only Jay King from Kings in the Morning and from the music business, The Way I See It. And today we have a show coming up. Why don't you tell people what time and what we're talking about, Jay?
The show is called The Way I See It. It's every Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And today we're, our show is called No Justice for Trayvon, The American Way. And Jay Rao, myself, Lynn Tolliver, and a few others are going to discuss, you know, why this continues to happen in this country. This isn't the first time. You know, Trayvon Martin is just one of many deaths that, that takes place in this country daily that are, you know, that are suspicious and are often without merit against our young people. And you know, nothing's done about it. And we're going to discuss it. We're going to discuss the Trayvon Martin case and what we can do, what we can do as a community to ensure or to better ensure that this doesn't happen again.
So that's coming up later on today. We encourage you guys to be a part of that conversation. Plus, you can also, if you're shy, you don't want to call in, by all means, you can participate. Just go to some of the social media websites that we monitor, and we have a thing called Chatterbox. If you are a first-time listener to the show, towards the end of the show, your comments, if you're here on BTR listening, we can take comments from the chat room or from other social medias, and we'll read that during a section of the show called Chatterbox. Plus, today, we're going to allow you the opportunity to relitigate the case. In other words, we're going to give you 5 minutes for your closing arguments. We encourage people to tune in for that, and that's coming up here shortly. Let's get back out to the phone lines. Mr. Elias, who do we have on the phone?
We have Gary the Advisor, Jay.
Gary, good morning. Welcome to the Sirius side, WCWK Radio. What's your comment, sir?
What's up, man? I just wanted to come in before I go into church this morning, but I wanted to say a couple things. I put out a post last night, and I think that a lot of people, particularly between whites and blacks, we don't spend enough time sitting down and talking about our racial issues. And what I have found with some of the white folks that I know is that the problem that we have in having this discussion is that they don't understand, yes, there may be some things with the law which allowed this to happen because the law in Florida is a very strange law. I mean, they let Casey Anthony walk after knowing that she killed her child. So this state has problems with its laws from the rip. Okay, so getting outside of the case and getting down to what this case means to us, what it means is that my child can walk down the street, be provoked by just about anybody, get into a fight, get shot and killed, and it get called self-defense. That is what this case amounts to. So I have some white friends that have responded to this saying, okay, well, that's true with anybody. But here's what I keep saying to them as well. When it boils down to one word against someone else's, in this case boiled down to George Zimmerman's word against a dead boy, okay, he said that Trayvon reached for his gun, and that's why he killed him, okay? It is his word against a dead person's word, okay? In this country, they will always take the white man's word over the black person, over a black person's word, 99% of the time. And that is where the problem is. It's one thing if the law was applied equally. It is not applied equally. And the thing about it is that's what black folks know. And I'm going to say this one last thing about this. And again, my white friends don't live my life, so they don't know. I have to worry about where I go to eat. There are places in South Carolina that I would never go eat. If you pass through South Carolina, never go to eat at Maurice's, okay? There are places in this world I cannot travel to because of the color of my skin. There are places in Tennessee my job won't send me to because it's so racist there, okay? There are places, there are things that I have to take into consideration because of the color of my skin that white folks don't have to think about. I put on my GPS when I go running, so if a cop ever stops me, there is evidence that is online as to where my whereabouts were. I have to think about that when I go out. White folks don't have to think about that. And this is what this case amounts to, is that it is the difference between one person's word against another. And when you take a white person's word against either a dead black person's word,
they will always take the right person's word.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Appreciate that, Gary.
Jay,
yeah,
can I say something here?
Oh,
I want to say something after Jay. Mm-hmm.
This is where I say the prosecution made a mistake in allowing those tapes in, and allowing the video in. Because what they did is they allowed George Zimmerman to testify without getting on the stand. See, they had, without those statements that we know that could be incriminating against George Zimmerman, they had enough legal sufficient information and facts to convict, if not for a murder charge, a manslaughter charge. But by allowing George Zimmerman to take the stand without taking the stand, because so you know he could say, you know, it didn't look so weird or wrong for him to say, no, I choose not to, because all he was going to do was reiterate what he's already said. So why should I cross-examine myself? Why should I put myself for cross-examination when the points that I tried to make have already been made for me by the prosecution? The prosecution made my point for me. Had the prosecution not put those, not opened it up for those tapes to be played, I think it would have put more pressure on the defense to have to put George Zimmerman on the stand. Or I think he would have been, because we would have never heard the testimony. We would have never heard any of the information about the sidewalk or none of that. None of that could have been brought in. But we got a chance to hear it because the prosecution opened it up. And it speaks to what the man, what the fellow just spoke. It speaks to what he just said. White folks will never understand that.
Dr. Prince, how do you?
But one thing I wanted to comment, one thing I want to comment on is this. Last week, I think it was last week when we talked about the Trayvon Martin case, and it was not to start an argument, but we had already said that there was possible evidence, reasonable doubt to believe that it was not a racial gesture, but rather someone who just feels he's like cowboys and Indians, and he feels like he's got power when he doesn't. You know, some people suffer that, and it's not a racial thing. It's just who they are, and whether that person would have been a white guy with a hoodie on or not, just his implication of what some may consider to be a thuggish presentation, this guy was caught in the altercation, and it necessarily was not necessarily a black-white situation. So I think that, I mean, like this week, and of course I figured that would happen, if Zimmerman would dare be found not guilty, that everybody, in spite of any evidence, would automatically revert back to the conclusion and the assumption that this was a black-white thing. You know, based on the evidence, I mean, what is it really? I mean, was it really a black-white case, or was this a guy who's an a-hole and feels that he's got, you know, he's the police, you know, and it's just a matter of that period. I'm just saying.
All right, let's get back out. The number I'll leave with you is 46, and I'll explain that in a second. Let's get back out to the phone lines. Mr. Elias, man, who do we have, sir?
We have Mike on the phone, Jay.
Good morning, Mike. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia.
Good morning, sir. What's your comments?
Yeah, I just think this whole case is crazy. I think the prosecutors, they're experienced prosecutors. The things that went down in that case, there's no way they should have went down. So if you ask me, I think that the prosecutors didn't want to charge him. They only charged him because of the outrage of him not being arrested and everything. I think they said, all right, if you niggas want a trial, we'll give you one, but don't expect to get a guilty verdict. Something like that. It's just crazy. And then the way that the white people are running around like, oh, he defended himself. There's no way me or any other black person on this earth to go do what he did, just do what he did and get the results that he got. I mean, it's so sickening. I'm like, it's just upsetting to even think about everything and talk about it. It's like Emmett Till all over again, because he killed the young kid, and then these news people, they just blast his dead body all over the TV screen for the whole world to see. They don't put white people dead. When a white person gets killed, they don't put their bodies on the TV for everybody to see. They didn't even put Bin Laden's so-called dead body on nothing so everybody can see. But you put his body up. It's like telling all Black America, listen, this is what's in store for you. So act like you got some sense or whatever, because you could be in the same position that this kid is in. And it's just crazy. That's my comment. I think it's just crazy. And it's like, when will Black people wake up and realize that things in this country just ain't right? I don't care what they say. And then it happens. It's kind of strange that a case like this happens under the watch of the so-called first Black president of America. And all he got to say is, oh, if I had a son, he probably looked like Trayvon. Like, come on, man.
All right, Mike, well, man, I appreciate your comments. We appreciate your comments, I should say, and thank you so much for listening to The Serious Side. 16 minutes after the hour, you're in tune to The Serious Side. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our call-in number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. Obviously, we're talking about the verdict and the George Zimmerman file. And, you know, and that's something, he brought up something, Jerome. Let me go to you on this, because, you know, I hadn't heard this up until this point, but I was waiting for it. How, as soon as this happened, people expected the president to come in and say what he has to say. And, you know, you and I both know that the president has to remain neutral on stuff like this. I mean, I know some people may disagree with that statement, but, you know, it's just like no president gets involved to a certain degree when you start getting down into state politics or you start getting down into, you know, city by city community. So let me ask you, and maybe I'm wrong, should the president come out and make a statement in regards to this verdict?
To make a statement, but just like in the Rodney King case, that you have to wait for the state prosecution. The Justice Department suspended their investigation knowing the state was prosecuting, and once the outcome happens, now the Justice Department gets to kick in. But my, just as a mental note of the whole process, remember this before everybody starts crying about it's not about race and I can't believe they're bringing it up. It was Zimmerman's defense that brought up race. That was a part of their closing arguments, is that here's what the statistics are, and they're mostly African-American males. They were painting a picture. And since they did that, they just put that fool on the hook for a civil rights violation of that kid's civil rights. If he profiled him because he was Black, his butt needs to go to federal prison. And I think that everybody's going to lose their mind talking about it's not about race, and we need to stop looking at it about race. And it absolutely was. And more importantly of the whole thing, I just want to remind everyone that when you start talking about juries and impressions of Black people, I want to remind you of this. When Black people were getting lynched, white people were taking bones, they were eating their livers, they were eating their hearts, they were lining up in line to take pieces of the person who was lynched home as souvenirs. So when the brother just mentioned the whole thing about displaying his body and not doing that to white folks, you dehumanize Black people for so long that white folks don't have an emotional attachment to it. But Black folks see the inequity in that, but they don't recognize it because it's been going on for so long. So we are dehumanized to such a degree that it subconsciously affects them when it's Black people. They go, oh, well, what was he doing? What did he do to deserve this? So we need to actually understand why that mentality exists, and understand that you are not getting any conscious decision from somebody who cannot relate to you culturally, because if they don't have a relationship with somebody Black, they are already disconnected from them.
You know, and you bring up an excellent point. You know, a lot of people are saying that it's not about race, Ms. Elias. But you know what? And Dr. Princess O'Dea made her comments, and I mentioned 46 before we picked up that phone call. 46 phone calls, you know, George Zimmerman has made to the police, 911, complaining about, you know, strange people in the neighborhood. You want to guess how many people, how many other races that he called the police on outside of African-American men? Zero. so to sit here and say that it's not about race, yeah, I guess, and then hear what people are going to say, Ms. Elias. Folks are going to say, well, you know, the reason why race shouldn't have been brought up in this thing is because they could go back and find things that George Zimmerman has done for black people. He has good black friends. You know, he let black children stay in his home. That ain't got a damn thing to do with the fact that 46 occasions, you know, George Zimmerman called police about strange African-American men in that neighborhood over a six-year period. You're trying to tell me that there was never any strange Hispanic men or strange white men in the neighborhood at any point in time? They were all black kids? I mean, come on, Mr. Elias. Well, really?
Well, Jay, you know, I'll take it back to Spike Lee's movie, Do the Right Thing, when they had this scene in there where the guys were saying that Magic wasn't black, Michael Jordan wasn't black, and neither was Prince black. Some people don't see black people as black people when they get to a certain status in life, or when they actually get to know you, you know.
Right.
And that's the point, man. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, I agree with Jay King. I don't think this guy, you know, is a racist, but I do believe he went after this kid because of his race. I don't know if that makes sense, but if I see a kid walking in my neighborhood with a hoodie on and it's raining out, I'm under the impression he's protecting himself from the weather.
Yeah,
it's a strange character.
Yeah, 21 minutes after the hour. It's the serious side. All right, let me go to you, Jay King, on this, because this is something that, to me, we can use as a teaching moment for our kids. And I know some people may disagree with this, and that's the reason why we do and have these types of conversations. One of the things that Mr. Elias and I got into a very heated discussion about this last night. One of the things that I would charge that we do is that we have to make the impression on our children that everything we do can have a consequence. Even though you may have the right to do it, doesn't necessarily mean it's a smart thing for you to do. An example that I brought up was, you know, for example, when you look at the pictures and stuff that Trayvon Martin was taking online, you know, there was pictures of him with a grill in his mouth. There were pictures of him, you know, flagging gang signs and smoking weed and you know, shooting his middle finger up. And he had the right to do that. And I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm saying here because, you know, it can get taken out of the context. He was innocent. There was no way he should have lost his life that night. But to me, and this is a comment that I made earlier in the show, and I wanted to clarify that because someone asked me about this on social media. My point was, is that can we use this as a teaching moment for our children that everything you do has a consequence, good, bad, or indifferent? Because, trust me, had those pictures not existed of Trayvon Martin, you know, in his gangster stances and all these different things, the defense would not have had the ammunition to be able to paint him as this black thug. Because if the only pictures existed out there were the football pictures and the skiing pictures and all these other pictures, there's no way they could have made that defense stink. Because what they did was they used these pictures. They brought in people from the neighborhood saying, well, yeah, black people broke into my house. That, you know, they kept showing this menacing picture of Trayvon. And so in a weird way, pictures that he took, Trayvon, on Facebook or whatever he was doing, it really helped, in my opinion, to seal the situation. What are your thoughts on that, Jay King?
Well, you know, I don't know if it helped to seal the situation, but it definitely helped to put an impression in the minds of everyone, you know, especially white people, you know, maybe this isn't an innocent kid. Maybe this is a bad guy who was doing bad things on this particular night, and they're just covering him up. You know, maybe he was going to do something. You know, I tell my sons are 28 and 29 years old, I have a 17-year-old. So I tell my boys at 28 and 29, my son Jay is an expert at self-defense. And I tell him, you have to have a stand-down type of attitude when you're out, because especially among police officers, white men in authority, in authority positions, because these people are intimidated by black folk. We have a certain power, especially black men. We have a certain power and strength that just come with us. And it can be intimidating. And whether we like it or not, see, I want my sons to stay alive. I want to see my kids. And whether people like it or not, yeah, we need to teach our kids, hey, you have to be able to assess a situation and and function and be smart so that you can live to talk about it the next day. We'll deal with the inequities of it later on. But today, let's stay alive. And, you know, you can't put those kind of pictures up because, you know, it could have been him. You know, we don't know what those pictures meant. You know, it could have been him goofing, making the gang sign, like he being goofy and somebody just, you know, those kind of pictures can hurt you. And in this case, they hurt Trayvon Martin, you know, smoking weed. You know, everybody got the right to do what they want to do, but you don't put that kind of stuff up. Negative connotations can be drawn of you and taken out of context. Because, again, we don't know why those pictures were taken. We don't know what they meant. We don't know what he was doing. It could have been all in innocence and fun, but because people can take an image, just like they can take a piece of something, and they can make it your whole life or your whole person, you have to be conscientious of what you're posting on social media, what you're tweeting out to social media, you know, what kind of visuals and audio you're putting up of yourself, because these are things that people are going to judge you by.
You know, Dr. Princess O'Dea, I was not mad at that father who beat those kids' tail when they were twerking and doing all that stuff online. I wasn't mad at that. He brought the beat down. There's no doubt about it. But I think his point was that you cannot do these types of things. And trust me, I don't want people to misconstrue anything what I'm saying. I am not saying that Trey, because I'm reading something here on Tag saying, "Are you?" I'm not blaming Trayvon for nothing. And folks, please stop trying to twist this into what it's not. I'm not blaming him for anything. He had the right to be out there that night. He had the right to go to the store and grab Skittles and, you know, grab iced tea. And George Zimmerman had no right to walk up to him and question him as if he was the police. Well, I guess he did. But, you know, the bottom line is that he had no authority. I guess that's the term I should use. Because you can walk up and ask anybody anything, and you have the right to have a free conversation. But he had no authority to address that kid in an authoritarian position saying that, hey, what are you doing out here? Because, you know, he's not a peace officer. But my point is that, to me, you know, we use this as a teaching moment because, you know, your kids shouldn't be out there, you know, like I said about the guy. He beat his kid's ass because they were out there twerking and doing all this nonsense online. And so all I'm saying is everything that you do can have a consequence, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. You just have to be careful. But kids will be kids, and that's just a part of the course. What's your thoughts on that comment, Dr. Princess O'Dea?
Well, my thoughts on that comment is this. Yeah, well, bottom line is, I don't agree with the, you know, beating the kids how he beat the kids, so I don't care, I don't believe in that.
Yeah, the discipline, I guess the point is he was trying to discipline them. You may not agree with the method. Yeah, well, you did.
I mean, you can discipline, but I don't believe in that. I can't even bring myself, I mean, I know that.
Okay, I don't want to turn it into. Okay, I understand. I don't want to turn it into. I want to talk about the justice. I want to turn it into methods of punishment. The bottom line is that he wanted to punish his kids for doing that. So whether you would have made your kids go do a timeout, regardless, the point was he justified in addressing that? And my bigger point is that children have to be careful as far as what they do because you never know, especially in today's society with the media, social media that's out there. When you take a picture and post it online, it's out there. You can never bring it back. It's gone. It's out there. It's done.
I understand that, and they have to pay the price for that, for their choice. If you are teaching your children, for example, I've got a 17. Well, she's getting ready to be 17 next week. But I have a 17-year-old daughter, and I have to monitor her and educate her. There have been choices that she has wanted to make, that she has made, you know, against my will, and she has been reprimanded for it. There have been times, yeah, you know, sometimes in some areas I may say, look, you keep it up. I'm gonna have to get at you, and it's not going to be nice. And I say that, and honestly, in my heart, I'm just like praying to God that she doesn't continue, because then I'm put in a very awkward position in my, because I don't like to put my hands on her. And yes, but I whipped it when they were little, I did. As I've become older and wiser, I feel there's another way. I feel at the age of 17, I've given you what I need. I should have given you already a lot of it. You've been raised. You know the basics, you know? You know to respect yourself. Don't be out there showing yourself, presenting yourself as a piece of trash or, you know, something looking vulgar. And it's a way that you have to address it, or else children won't hear it. They'll totally rebel, you know? So I'll choose to kind of say, well, do you realize how this looks? I know that the other girls are doing it. And it's just what's natural in the society. They go to school dancing and have twerking contests in front of the teachers. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because that's how they dance today. It's almost a form of art. And if you look at even the African dances, those girls shake their butts and do all kind of things, and that's what they do. And
let me jump in because I don't want us to go down. It's not about that. My point was, and this is what I need from you. My point was, there you go. Kids, when they do things, as far as, you know, when you do certain things, it can come back to haunt you. So can we use this as a teaching moment for our children that everything you post online is not smart for you to do, even though you have every right in the world to do it?
Well, yes. And that's what I was saying. I don't believe in necessarily beating, but I believe that you can educate, and it's a way that you come to the children where they will actually hear you. I believe that through, you know, and we do need to use it as a teaching moment. Now that I hear you ask it like that, absolutely. And that's what I do with my kids. I'm not going to just beat you. So, no, I don't agree with the way he handled it. I don't care. Okay, he's been saying, but a lot of times when parents come from a place, and I have to say this on this topic, when parents come from a place that are not understanding the child, but reprimanding them, not giving them even a clue that they do understand the parent, that the parent is not giving the child a clue that they even understand or can relate to them on some level, oftentimes the children will rebel and do whatever they're going to do. They keep doing it because they really don't get it, because they don't feel you get it. That's why it's important for us to sit down, talk to our children. I like to use examples and parables, and so I can at least get to the point where my child has the, oh, wow, yeah, that does sound bad, you know.
Yeah.
Well, oh, no, I don't want to look like that. You know, we have to give them a reason to think for themselves, to make them think they came up with it themselves. But when we come from a reprimanding tone, a lot of times, and you're yelling at them, don't do that. I don't want to see you do that. They're like, oh, Dad, oh, Mom, whatever. You know, you don't know. You're just old and don't get it, you know. But when you sit down and educate, talk to your child, you'll get a different response 9 times out of 10. And you don't even have to go to the beating that man did with his children.
Right. It's the bottom of the hour. You're listening to The Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our call-in number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. You can participate in the conversation. Coming up here shortly, we will give our closing arguments. We're going to do it's a mulligan. We're going to take a mulligan here. We're going to go back. And, you know, for those who want to participate, you can call in, and people here on the show, you get 10 minutes, and if you call in, you get 5. We want people to be able to come call in and give their comments on this, because the bottom line is that you had an unarmed African-American boy was shot down and killed because he was black in America, and that's a comment that I'm reading from one of the social medias that we're monitoring. So, and also Chatterbox, so you have an opportunity to make your comments, and we'll read those on the air as well. You know, one of the things that you mentioned, Jerome, earlier in the conversation is the fact that the federal government, they had a case pending against this guy, and they suspended that case. They didn't get rid of it. They suspended the case because they wanted to let the state go through its notions. Now that that has happened, how quick and how fast, if they haven't done this already, do you think that the federal or the Justice Department will pick this case up and run with it?
Well, I think they're just kind of measuring the climate, but I think they're going to probably pick it up by the end of the month, I would think, because, like I said, they were already investigating, and they were kind of sitting in with the state, and so they just suspended it, and once the closing arguments came, they opened themselves up by profiling, and that's what federal needed. I'm surprised that they weren't that smart, but they actually opened the door for federal to come in, just by making that case. And also, you know, I do want to say this about the state. I found it very disturbing that the lead prosecutor for the state, she didn't present anything, but she was running it. I found it very disturbing how happy she was last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just kind of said to me that the state of Florida wasn't really putting no effort into this. She was doing it for show. That, now, you want to talk about where to point the finger at. I won't blame the prosecution. I think they did a decent job to convict him. But I want to say from her direction, she looked like she was enjoying the attention. So it didn't seem like that was a big loss to her. And the one of the prosecutors said this is only the second time that he's ever lost in this type of case. And he was a little bit more disturbed and a little bit more fiery towards the reporters during the press conference. But she, the lead prosecutor, was just kind of like, well, you know, I just want to thank everybody and their actions and blah, blah, blah. But she really showed the face of Florida for me, that even on the prosecution side, they were like, hey, you just went into court, you lost, and we need to move on. So I take some kind of, you know, I just want to shine a little light on that as well.
Jay, can I read something real quick?
Absolutely.
Just when we thought the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case was over after Zimmerman's acquittal, the Obama administration has taken the steps needed to file federal charges, thus sidestepping well-established double jeopardy against Zimmerman. Unidentified sources within the administration confirm that Obama and Justice Eric Holder at the Department of Justice have filed charges against Zimmerman for violating Trayvon Martin's civil rights. Double jeopardy is an often misunderstood concept in American law. The rule merely states that an individual cannot be tried twice for the same crime in the same court. And this is why I didn't want the race issue to be brought up in this case. Because once you bring it up in this case, and he wins, and he would have won it at the state level, the federal level, they would have had no recourse. But because they didn't make it that, and now we get to go after the race thing. So I thought it was smart for them not to do that. But
and that's a good point, because
like,
I was just go ahead.
No, I just want to say it seems like the Obama administration is going after him on federal charges.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because we were just having a conversation off the air about double jeopardy. So I'm glad you brought that up. So, you know, I definitely, you know, folks need to make sure that they're educated and they understand what this is all about. So, I mean, that's a great point. But go ahead, Jerome.
Can I say this? That is not double jeopardy. The state can't bring charges twice. Federal can bring charges.
Sure.
And we've seen that happen before, and they usually do that after you're convicted. The state or the federal will throw some more charges onto you. They do this with RICO stuff all the time. So this is nothing
new. What I'm saying is that they couldn't have charged him. They couldn't have made this a race thing, and then the federal come and do it jeopardy at that point. So jeopardy.
No. The murder charge is what they couldn't charge him with. Florida doesn't have a statute for violating civil rights.
I understand that, but they don't have one for violating
civil rights. Yeah, that's a federal offense. It's like a RICO law is a federal offense, so state prosecutors can't prosecute you for it. So they bring in the U.S. attorneys for those type of prosecutions. So when there's not a state law that covers, federal has laws that things you just can't do in this country, and those RICO civil rights violation kind of laws, those things are federal charges. They're not state charges at all, so they couldn't bring them anyway. The problem was is that once Zimmerman's defense opened up the window by saying this is what black folks do in this community, and he looked at that and this guy was a suspect, they brought race into this, and now they're about to get kicked for it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Serious Side right here on the TGRS Radio Network. Online radio at its best, 347-850-1272. 347-850-1272. As you can see, very passionate arguments in regards to this case. I started the show off by saying today's not a good day because, you know, I'm the same color as Trayvon. So if I had a son, even the fact that I have a daughter, because that they're an African American, there are so many cases where, you know, African Americans have been killed and really nothing happened. You know, Jerome, we always bring up what happened to the young man who was at a bachelor party before his wedding, and he got shot down. I mean, it's like it's nothing. And so, you know, the mentality of these white people that were sitting on this jury, you know, you cannot have proper representation if you've never walked in my shoes. The best person that can tell my story is a person that it's either me or someone who knows me, who's been around me, who's walked in my shoes. White people cannot understand some of this stuff. And I appreciate the ones that are really trying to go out there and try to say, you know, listen, people understand common sense. And people understand the fact that what's right, what's right, what's wrong, what's wrong. But one of the things I said yesterday on the show, Ms. Elias, and you can go back and rewind it, I said that people keep making the point up that we have these mothers on the board. I said, you know what, that could be a problem. I said the reason why is because they know people are saying, well, they're mothers and they're going to have empathy for Trayvon's family. To me, that was a danger sign. The fact that they were mothers didn't have a damn thing, in my opinion, to do with it. Because they wanted to make sure that people did not could come back to say, no, the reason why you let them off is because you're a mom and you felt sorry for them. I said that yesterday, Mr. Elias, during the broadcast.
Well, Jay, you know, the bottom line is you want to be, you know, I always, you know, say that I want to stand in front of my accusers and I want to stand in front of the jury of my peers, man. You know, well, he's a jury of his peers. Like I said, like you said earlier, they don't understand the plight of any of us because they don't live in our shoes. You know, that nobody can understand your plight unless you live through what we've lived through. You know, and so when we say that George Zimmerman stood in front of the jury of his peers, he did. His peers, not ours.
Exactly. So now, one of the things, like I said before, we're going to give our closing arguments here in a few minutes, and I want to make sure we have enough time. So if you want to participate in that, I'm going to suggest that you go ahead and call in now, 347-850-1272, because we want to give listeners an opportunity to give their closing arguments. We want to give you, you know, at least 5 minutes to do that. And then people here on the panel that would like to participate in this, you can have 10 minutes. I want to make sure we have enough time. Plus, you can always put your comments either in the chat room, or you can put them on Facebook or on Twitter, or you can go to other places that we're monitoring and put your comments there as well. We'd love to hear from you because it's passion. I think it's something that, you know, listen, it's not a coincidence, Jay King, that this happened in Florida. Look what happened with the Casey Anthony case. I mean, things that you think are just clear-cut didn't work out that way. So let me ask this question. Because we're on the outside looking in. None of us was there. We've been monitoring the trial, you know, just like as if we were sitting in the classroom. But the fact is that we didn't have access to all the evidence like the jurors did. Is it the fact that maybe the jurors made the right decision in this case based on the evidence that they had?
Well, no. I think when you look at, we did have access to a lot of the evidence, to all of the evidence. As a matter of fact, because of YouTube and Google, we have the same access to information as they do. You know, this, you know, common sense sometimes ain't so common. And I think this is just an example of that, of common sense not being so common, that people didn't, because if people use their common sense, to me this is one of those kind of cases that was a common sense case. You know, where they didn't have the pieces to the puzzle. You know, I got to make it make sense to me, because it's got to make sense. So, you know, all the things that this guy said Trayvon Martin did will make me think that he was a little baby being manhandled by an adult, and just when he got loose, he just one opening, and he just took one shot, and it was a lucky shot, and he, you know, I mean, everything he had to do, you know, it happened in a split second. He did everything. He couldn't do anything right for 20 minutes, and in a split second, he did everything right. You know, I think this is a common sense case, and we did get to see the evidence, and that's why there's so much discourse. That's why there's so much, you know, and not so much because Trayvon Martin was black and George Zimmerman is of Latin and white descent. It's because all the facts are right in front of us that point to him being at least guilty of manslaughter, and this guy gets to walk away free. Michael Vick, you know, all hearsay, nobody's seen anything, no visuals, no nothing. This guy goes to jail for 3.5 years for killing a dog.
Yeah.
So, you know, you start to look at this thing, you say, okay, something's wrong here. You know, the same thing happened with Oscar Grant. You know, you got a police officer that shoots a kid in the back of the head, you know, when his hands are behind his back and he's cuffed, and he, you know, he gets to walk. So it almost tells you that, you know, things be so much in the favor you almost have to be a paraplegic, a black male paraplegic, for somebody to find somebody guilty, to find a white man guilty. And even then, they might say his movement, you know, his quick movement caused the murder.
Yeah. And like I said, and, you know, and doing, like I said, coming up here next, matter of fact, we're going to give our closing arguments. You know, the bottom line is that one of the things that George Zimmerman mentioned, Jerome, is that Trayvon Martin took and bashed his head 25 times against the concrete. And then the defense proceeded to get on top of a dummy that weighed 5 pounds and illustrate this. And my point to this whole thing, and where I'm going with this, is there's no way a 16-year-old kid, just a regular 16-year-old kid, I'm not talking about some kid training for some type of athlete or some kid that, you know, I'm talking about a regular kid that, you know, just walks around like most kids. There's no way that this guy can do that. I mean, listen, the NFL will not let young kids in the league after high school. Do you know why they do this? Because they're saying that your body is not physically mature to handle the beating of grown-ass men. There's no way a 16-year-old kid is going to take a grown-ass 28-year-old man, who, by the way, works out 3 times a week taking self-defense classes, is going to take a grown man and beat his head against the concrete 25 times unless this guy was unconscious and he couldn't fight back. I mean, the comments that George Zimmerman made were ridiculous, and it was set up, and to me, the prosecution dropped the ball. Your thoughts, Jerome?
Well, you know, to add on to that, that is why the jury of your peers are important, because who does not know that? You know, at 16, 17 years old, you don't have the weight. You're talking about a grown 28-year-old coming up aggressively, weighing, you know, what, about 220, 230,
yeah,
coming at you aggressively. And you're telling that kid, well, you should have run, you should do whatever. He's gonna panic. He has a right to stand his ground. Florida has a stand your ground law, right? So some guy who's taken MMA training, who took handgun training, is coming out his car with a gun, that he's the only one that knows he has a gun. And they actually said that he was fearful. Now, that is playing on your mindset of what you think of black people if you believe that kid had an attitude towards him. I don't know how many times I've bumped into rent-a-cops in my life, people at pizza places sitting behind the counter yelling at young black girls because they thought they was in the right and they can call the police. My experience tells me that dude ran up on that kid. And plus, I think the medical examiner said you wouldn't have scratches on your head if you were getting hit in concrete, right?
Yep.
So, and plus the position of the body. Zimmerman said his gun was towards the back. If Trayvon was sitting on him, he couldn't have reached it from the back because his back would have been on the ground. There were all of these inconsistencies, and every story that I've been hearing over the last, you know, whatever, so many hours is Zimmerman's version, like that was true, and that is the problem. And so we can't, just like in the OJ case, we can't edge falsehoods into our memory, because now what's going to happen going forward, you're going to have people like some fools in the chat room saying things like, "Well, he said," and they don't know who's saying that because everybody's speculating on who said what, because Zimmerman is not talking, and he lied about 12 times, so you don't know which version you're picking from when you say he said. Because he lied so much. So that is my point, is by default, we are easy to vilify this kid at the same time, because we're like, well, we know kids who could have did that, and we are being crazy ourselves. That is a black-on-black crime if I ever heard one. Just because you know some black people in jail, you're going to think that this guy possibly could have been like this kid I used to know when I was little.
Yeah.
That is nonsense. Yeah. So we need to be smarter as adults and as leaders to say, listen, Imagine if that was your little girl. Imagine it. You should have the right to go to the store during the halftime of a game, and it's time sensitive because you want to get back before the game starts, to buy something for your little brother and get home. That's how much he was looking for George Zimmerman. It was raining,
yeah.
And he wanted to get home between halftime of a doggone game, and now everybody turns that like he stopped and pursued Zimmerman. That is crazy for us to even have the dialogue.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. All right, we're going to step out here, folks. Coming up next, we're going to give our closing arguments in this situation, and we'll be back. It's the Serious Side. It's Sunday. Don't want to miss this. Coming up next, right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best.
We couldn't stay there, and God is saying that
we fall down,
oh,
but
mind.
We get up.
Get back
we
up.
Fall down,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
We get up.
Back up.
We fall down,
oh my, my, my.
We
get, back up again. But we can't stay there. There's a seed of righteousness inside of us. Oh,
we
fall down.
But
we get back up again.
We fall down
sometimes. But we get back up again. Yes, we do it then.
We
rise back up again.
For
the
Never, 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 never,
the week that was in the news.
All right, folks, it is time for, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made headlines. And everyone knows the stories that made headlines. It's really one story. But I want to take an opportunity to read some of the Twitter feeds that some of the athletes put out there. So we have reactions from athletes on the verdict of the George Zimmerman trial. Let me see here. Let me get over here. We have one from Chris Paul. Chris Paul says, wow. Prayers out to the Martin family. We have something here from Shaq. Shaq says, George Zimmerman not guilty. Can you believe that? Wow. Dwayne Wade says, wow. Stunned, saddened as a father. Someone make sense of this verdict for me right now, please. Don't worry, I'll wait. Then he comes back and he says, how do I explain this to my young boys? Let me see. We have another one from Lennox Lewis. He says, look, this thing is moving fast, folks. I'm sorry because it's an active feed. So let me see. Can I get it in here? Oh, boy. I lost it. It's an active feed. So anyway, those are some of the responses. So, Mr. Elias, I guess where I was going with this is that, you know, athletes were paying attention to this thing just like everyone else.
Of course, man. I mean, they're athletes, but they're also black athletes, too. So, you know, it affects them and their families, too. So, you know, they're going to pay attention to it. So it's a high-profile case.
Absolutely. You know, Jerome, we talk about these athletes being self-centered and the fact that, you know, they make all this money and they really don't give a damn about things. But, you know, listen, they're showing us through these Twitter feeds that they are in tune with it and that they're human and that they're just as confused as us regular folks.
Well, they have a voice, too, and it's good sometimes when they can get up and just say what's going on. I know a lot of people want them to be quiet, but that is just racism and oppression. Some people are scared to say that. So sometimes you just need to suck it up and hear what needs to be said. You need to speak truth to power when it's time.
You know, Tracy Martin also, that's Trayvon's father, he got out there on the Twitterverse and he says, look, even though I'm heartbroken, my faith is unshattered. I will always love my baby Trey. He also tweeted, thanks to everyone who was with us and who will be with us as we continue, let's see, be with us. And he said, S-I, I'm not sure what that means. We together can make sure that this doesn't happen again. And then he also says, God bless me and Sabrina with Trey. And even in his death, I know my baby would be proud of the fight along that we put along. And with all of you all, we put up for him. God bless. So those are some of the tweets that are going out in regards to the case. All right, it's time for Chatterbox. Mr. Elias, man, Chatterbox is a part of the show. We read comments from social media, from the web, from the chat room and things of that nature. Mr. Elias, man, who do you have, my brother?
I got Hay Levine, in which you said, we witnessed the ugly side of justice, the justice system, where they criminalize the innocent but protect the guilty. How backwards is that?
You know, I have one here from Anna Redding. She says, you know what? We are saying yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, in the South, speaking respectfully. Did that prevent our families from being murdered? No. So who is it to say that it would have prevented his murder since this wannabe gang, since this wannabe gung-ho crime watcher, policeman, U.S. Marshal, decided to take the law into his own hands? Since he was tired of, okay, these assholes, in his words, MLs killed me, but now you just made it okay. Shaking my MMMF head, so I guess we know what that means. Give me another one, Mr. Elias.
Easy Rider says, I always say that that they should have had a black prosecutor on the team, and the prosecutor should have been a black, and they should have, prosecutors should have been black jurors too.
Yeah. And then we have one more here from Rebecca M. She says the only crime that Trayvon Martin committed was being black and American. So that's Chatterbox this morning for July 14th, 2013.
I'd be the wise one.
Okay, go ahead.
I like this. You said we all knew the verdict was going to be from the member the jury was picked. I just think about it. Who on that jury would stand up for a young black kid unless they was there?
Okay. All right, folks, as promised, we said we will give our closing arguments because a lot of us feel that the defense didn't do a good job with this. So what we want to do now is allow people on the panel. It looks like the only people going to participate will be me and Jay King. Looks like Jerome, he doesn't want to participate. Mr. Elias is, quite frankly, too upset to participate, and I can understand that. So anyway, Jay King, let me go ahead and give you the floor, man. It's time for your closing arguments in the George Zimmerman murder case. The floor is yours.
Trayvon Martin can't tell the truth. He can't say or do anything. He's dead. But George Zimmerman, he can. He can clear everything up. But he wouldn't take the stand. Does that sound like truth to you? Does that sound like honesty to you? Does that sound like forthright to you? Because George Zimmerman, the grown adult male sitting in the defendant's chair in this trial, would like you to believe his story, his chain of events, his recollection. But he won't tell them to you. He wouldn't take the stand to tell his story and open himself up to cross-examination because his lies, his deceit, his tale, his story would be challenged, dissected, and pulled apart. And you know what would happen then? The truth would come out. And George Zimmerman doesn't want you to know the truth. See, if you know the truth, then you would know for sure George Zimmerman is guilty of stalking a young teenage boy. Guilty of doing what a police dispatcher asked him not to do. Are you following him, sir? Yes, I am. We don't need you to do that, sir. Guilty of using his weapon to kill an unarmed, innocent teenage boy walking home with Skittles and an iced tea. If George Zimmerman took the stand, without a doubt, you would find out he is guilty of second-degree murder. If you've ever been accused of something you know you didn't do, you will go out of your way to make sure everyone knows you didn't do it. And you won't let it rest until everyone knows or at least is aware of the fact that you won't let the issue die. We as humans understand this as truth. Human nature wants you to know when truth is being told. Trayvon Martin can't tell his truth. He is dead. Killed. Shot in cold blood by a deprived mind. Depraved mind. In order to convict someone of second-degree murder, we have to prove that there was a depraved mind at work here. So here's the definition of a depraved mind. Depravity of mind refers to the state of mind which is contrary to justice, honesty, or morality. Depravity of mind is a condition where there is a deviation or departure from the ordinary standards of honest, good morals, justice, or ethics has to be shocking to the moral sense of the society. Depravity of mind can also be described as an act of baseness, vileness, or depravity in the private and social duties which a person owes to another or to a community. George Zimmerman was neighborhood watch. He was not the police. He owed it to his community to act responsibly, to act honestly and in good morals and just. You see, whether out of fear or anger, on this particular night, a depraved mind walked the streets of Sanford, Florida in a housing project, ready to erupt at any sign of the enemy, an enemy he had stored in his depraved mind. An enemy that looked, walked, dressed, and fit the profile of Trayvon Martin. And that depraved mind engaged in actions that resulted in the death of a teenage boy named Trayvon Martin, an innocent child that could have been yours or mine. Not a teenager in mischief, just a teenager out to purchase a few items at a local convenience store and continue watching a sports program, waiting for his brother to pick him up. But a depraved mind was lurking. And that depraved mind murdered a young, innocent teenage boy for nothing other than protecting himself from a depraved mind, and that depravity belonged to George Zimmerman. Second-degree murder must not just be considered, but applied, because the law states depravity of mind refers to the state of mind which is contrary to justice, honesty, or morality. Depravity of mind is the condition where there is a deviation or departure from the ordinary standards of honesty, good morals, justice, or ethics as to be shocking to the moral sense of the society. Depravity of mind can also be described as an act of baseness, vileness, depravity, or depravity in the private and social duties which a person owes, to another. He owed this to Trayvon Martin or to a community. He owed it to his community to not bring this bad light. We're having this conversation because a depraved mind committed a depraved act. And that's why George Zimmerman should be found guilty of second-degree murder.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you know, this case is really, it's all about common sense. We can throw out all the experts. I tell you, well, let's throw them out on both sides. Let's forget all these people who came up and gave us all this scientific evidence as to why this, that happened. Let's throw it out for a second. Because what I'm going to do this morning is I'm going to leave you with some examples that you can do at home. You can do this in the comforts of your home. And when you're done completing these tasks or doing these experiments, if your answers are yes to these things, then your answer should be yes to convict George Zimmerman. And we're going to use George Zimmerman's words because he said this. He was a coward. He didn't take the stand. And I'll give you my opinion on that a little later. But let's break it down for a second. Throw out everything. Use your common sense. Bring your common sense to the table here, because it's required in order for you to make a sound and just decision. For example, you've seen pictures. We've held him up in court. George Zimmerman, he has blood coming from his nose and mouth. His nose is disjointed. He has blood on the back of his head. And according to George Zimmerman, and he said this, I didn't, that Trayvon Martin was on top of him with his hands over his nose and over his mouth. And at the same time was trying to grab a weapon that somehow, you know, Trayvon knew, he's psychic, he knew that George Zimmerman had a weapon in the small of his back, because that's what George Zimmerman said. The weapon was located in the small of his back. So while he's on his back, at dark, in the dark, while it's raining, Trayvon, with this sense that he has, knows to not only put his hands over the nose and mouth of George Zimmerman to suffocate him, but at the same time, grab the weapon. And the reason why George was able to grab the weapon, because he felt Trayvon was going after his gun. Is Trayvon Martin an octopus? This is a 17 or 16-year-old kid. So he has enough strength to sit here and hold this man down to do all this. But let's say that you believe that. Here's where science is going to come back in. They said, the medical examiner said, there was no traces of George Zimmerman DNA on Trayvon Martin's hands. None. You just can't wash it away. It's DNA. So here's your first exercise that I want you to perform in the privacy of your home. I want you to take a packet of ketchup, smear it around your nose, put it on your mouth, and then take your hand and put it over your nose and mouth, and then pull your hand back. What do you see? You're going to see ketchup. Even if you wash the ketchup off, sniff your hands. You're going to smell ketchup residue. But none of this was found on Trayvon Martin. Now, according to Mr. Zimmerman, Trayvon was on top of him, beating him. He was on his back, fearing for his life. But let me go back for a second, because I know there's people out there saying, well, it was raining that night. Maybe the rain washed the blood off Trayvon's hands. Okay, I'll give you that. But if it was raining that night, was it a special type of rain? Was it a hit and miss rain? Was it the type of rain that would wash blood off Trayvon's hands but not wash blood off George Zimmerman's head and his nose and mouth? Think about that. Now, Trayvon, on top of this man, beating him. This is what he told you guys. This is the testimony that you heard this morning. I mean, throughout the trial. So now, here's another exercise that I want you to do, because according to police and the pictures, when they took pictures of George Zimmerman's back, when he stood up, there was nothing on his back. So I want you to go outside. When you get home, wet your grass, okay? Then lay down in your grass. And you tell me when you get up, will the back of your jacket be wet? You damn right it will be, because you were laying on your back and it was wet and raining. There's also a picture that we have, and we've shown this in court, that the front of George Zimmerman's shoes has grass stains on them. The toe of his shoes has grass stains on them. You saw the pictures. But yet, when you look at the back view of this picture, there's no grass stains on the back of his heels. So here's another exercise that you can do. Go work in your garden. Get on your hands and knees, work on your garden. Get up and look at your shoes. You're going to see dirt, grass stains, because you were in the position on top. Folks, let me tell you something. We can sit here and go back and forth with physical evidence all day long. I mean, with this scientific stuff. We can do this. But common sense should prevail in this thing. And let me hit you with something else. According to Mr. Zimmerman, his head was bashed in the concrete 25 times. Think about that for a second. A hard sidewalk, this 17-year-old kid, skinny kid, is on top of a guy who goes to training three times a week. But yet still, he was able to manhandle this man, right, who outweighed him by, I don't know, 40 or 50 pounds. But he was able to bash his head into the concrete. And you saw the defense get on top of a dummy which weighs 5 pounds and illustrate this fact to you. Here's another exercise. Go home, lay on the sidewalk, and then just bump your head back and forth 25 times and tell me how you feel after the first two. But it was reported by law enforcement that when they arrived on the scene, George Zimmerman was conscious. He knew everything that was going on. Don't you think that if you hit your head, there are people who have died from one blow to the back of the head. But this man wants you to believe that this guy bashed his head into the concrete 25 times? Nonsense. It's bull crap. And so then you had this expert witness comes on the stand and says, according to the things, all the marks on the back of Zimmerman's head is consistent with his testimony. You know, when defense and prosecutors, when they bring in special witnesses and things of this nature and experts, these people are there to paint the picture of the crime because there's really no witnesses. They're there to give an expert opinion, things of that nature. Why are we listening to these people when we, on oath, talk to the person who treated who treated George Zimmerman and said that the cuts were very, very small, not even an inch thick. They were very, very small. They were not considered life-threatening. But he wants us to believe his head got bashed on the concrete 25 times. And last but certainly not least, are you following him? Yes, we don't need you to do that. Are you following him? Yes, we don't need you to do that. Are you following him? Yes, we don't need you to do that. Now, according to the defense, Trayvon Martin was following George Zimmerman. But we'll never find that out, will we? Because the only person that's alive who can retell this story, which has done a very horrible job of it, is George Zimmerman. Folks, please use your common sense. You can throw out everything else. Use your common sense. You can sit here and think. You can sit here and try to use the law to your advantage and say, oh, my God, based on the law, you know, they didn't prove it without a reasonable doubt. I want you to bring your common sense to the table with this thing, because everything this man has said, he lied about. There's no way Trayvon would have reached for his gun. He couldn't see his gun, according to George Zimmerman. Let's do the right thing. Let this be a defining moment in history where we do the right thing. Bottom line is, George Zimmerman is guilty of murder. If you come back with anything less than that, you have committed a travesty to justice. And you will disappoint a lot of people in this country. People will lose their faith in this justice system if you come back with a not guilty verdict on George Zimmerman.
Sir, have you seen this girl?
Hello, friends. I'm Jay, the host of the Jay Rouse Show and the serious side of the Jay Rouse Show. And it's time for another edition of Have You Seen Me? Where we put the spotlight on missing children of color. Tonight, we are going to Oakland, California. Police are searching an area of Oakland near 79th International Boulevard for a missing child. The California Highway Patrol issued an Amber Alert in this case. The alert was issued from Alameda, Contra Costa, and San Francisco counties. Police said the toddler's father told them that he went into Jazz Ali's Liquor on the 1400 block of 79th Avenue at about 11 a.m. When he returned, the child was gone. Daphne Viola Webb is 11 months. She was in a car with a relative who is reportedly disabled. When the father came back to the car, the relative was there, but the child was gone. Police said they are searching the area with dogs and have launched a helicopter. The father and other relatives are also being interviewed, according to police. An Amber Alert may be activated in the case by the California Highway Patrol. Daphne is a black female with black hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing orange pajamas with pink hearts. The suspect was only described as a light-skinned black female. There are no vehicles associated with this case. Anyone with information on the girl's whereabouts is asked to call the Oakland Police Department at 510-238-3641. Once again, that number is 510-238-3641. Or you can dial 911. If you'd like to see someone featured on Have You Seen Me, all you have to do is get in contact with the show. Pick up the phone and dial 347-850-1272 if you are listening to this show live. Or you can go to our Facebook page, TGRS Radio Network, leave the information there. Or you can contact me direct on Facebook at JAYRIL. Or shoot an email to the show, thejrileshowatlive.com. That's thejrileshowatlive.com. Pray for all people missing, regardless of color. And until next time, I'm Jay Rao. You've been listening to Have You Seen Me, where we focus our attention on missing people of color. Take care. Yes.
Somewhere in America, a mother is crying.
A family is torn.
A child is lost.
Missing. Or even abducted.
We need your help.
Contact your local police station for a listing of missing children in your area, or log on to www.missingkids.com.
To obtain further information regarding missing children in your local community.
There's the next face you see.
Maybe a child that will need your help.
Help support America Missing!
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. After more than 16 hours of deliberations, the jury in the George Zimmerman trial reached a verdict last night.
In the Circuit Court of the 18th Judicial Circuit in and for Seminole County, Florida, State of Florida versus George Zimmerman, verdict: we, the jury, find George Zimmerman not guilty. So say we all, four person.
Zimmerman was acquitted of both second-degree murder and manslaughter in the shooting death of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin last year. His attorneys maintained he acted in self-defense. Law enforcement officials have been preparing for protests after any verdict. A few hundred people took part in largely peaceful demonstrations in major cities in California. Back in Sanford, Florida, NPR's Hansi Lo Wang reports people there responded peacefully.
Just 5 miles north of the Seminole County Courthouse after the verdict was announced, dozens were gathered on porches and sidewalks late into the evening in Goldsboro. It's one of Sanford's historically black neighborhoods, and where Sanford resident Eddie Wright stopped by to process the news with neighbors.
I felt like justice was done.
Felt like justice was done.
Yeah.
Valera Schaefer did not approve of the verdict. She also lives in Stanford, and she said George Zimmerman's acquittal stirred up deep emotions about Trayvon Martin's death.
I feel like he died all over again. That's how I feel like, you know, like a hit in the stomach and the chest.
Hansi Lo Wang, NPR News, Stanford, Florida.
There are still 17 people missing and feared dead after a train derailed and exploded in a small town in Quebec more than a week ago. The bodies of 33 others have been recovered. Yesterday, the bell at the 92-year-old St. Agnes Church rang 50 times, one for each person believed to have died. Violence is on the rise again in Darfur. NPR's Gregory Warner reports at least 7 United Nations peacekeepers were killed in a firefight yesterday. 17 more were wounded.
The UN peacekeepers, believed to be Tanzanian troops, were ambushed while on patrol protecting civilians in the southern sector of Darfur. Unknown attackers used heavy artillery and rocket-propelled grenades. Violence in Darfur has surged since January as government forces battle African rebel leaders as well as Arab warlords who had been armed by the government earlier in the conflict. Rebel leaders have an interest in portraying Darfur as insecure and unsafe for development to prevent international donors from feeding money through the Sudanese government, money that they say will be used to discriminate against them. Recently, rebel forces declared foreign peacekeepers a legitimate target. Gregory Warner, NPR News.
Bombs exploded last night outside two mosques in the Iraqi capital of Baghdad. Police say at least 21 people were killed. The attacks targeted Sunni Muslims who gathered to pray after breaking their daily fast for the holy month of Ramadan. This is NPR News from Washington.
Folks, it's been a decent show today, great show. Glad everyone participated in the show now. Usually we don't do this, but I know people have comments that they want to make. So real quick, we're going to try to get a couple of phone calls in. We're going to ask guys that you make it short. We'll give you 30 seconds. Mr. Elias, who are we going to first?
We're going to Antonio, sorry.
All right, let's go to Antonio. Antonio, 30 seconds, sir. Welcome to the Serious Side. What's your comment?
I would like to say about George Zimmerman, extensive LA training, because in West Philadelphia, where I was born and raised, on the playground, I spent most of my days sitting out, maxing, relaxing on pool, shooting some people outside of school, and then some guys, they were up to no good. They started making trouble in my neighborhood.
All right, who else are we going to, Mr. Elias? I guess we're going to Expired Scooby Snack. Welcome into the Serious Side. Real quick, 30 seconds. Yes, sir. Or ma'am.
Let me tell you this, man. What we need to do is start tearing the masks off of these cripples.
All right, I'm not sure what that's all about. All right, listen, let's get to our final thoughts. All right, I'm sorry, Mr. Elias.
Yes, man, I was having a...
We can't. Yeah, we can't get to him. All right, listen, let's go with our final thoughts. It's time for our final thoughts, and Jay King, man, your first final thoughts.
I mean, you know, I'm not surprised by the verdict. I'm not surprised by, you know, the outpouring of concern in this country and why people are upset, you know, but... And I think that we're going to make inroads because of this. I think as a community, we're starting to wake up more and more. And I just believe that something is going to be done differently because we're going to make something happen. And we can say, you know, nothing's going to change, nothing's going to be different. And as long as we say that, then that's correct. But and I tell people all the time, don't try to change the world, just change your world. So if you and the people around you make the change, then the change will happen, even if it's on your level. Everybody else will catch up to it.
All right. Okay. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for sitting in this morning. Dr. Princess, I'll do your final thoughts.
Well, my final thoughts, they're this. First, I want to say great, great, great closing arguments. I mean, where were the attorneys? Oh, man, you guys, Mr. Collins, you should be out there. That was great. It even enlightened me even more, and it made so much sense. It's just important for all of us to really be conscious of our surroundings and what's really going on. In this case, I mean, Jay, I'm going to tell you, Jay Rowe, after hearing your argument and those pointing out the evidence that was clear, the contradictions that were indisputable, I have to say I think that it could be definitely considered where in this case it is the submission of 46 cases that he had or 44 place that he had, and they were all black. It has been guilty in our communities oftentimes of people using a race or another as a token, especially within the black community. where we're token. He'll do nice things, but really, in fact, it's just to cover up the truth of them, of their own prejudice. And I think that could be an argument, a reasonable doubt in this situation that would have caused this case to go another way if somebody would have laid it out just how you did in those steps. It's just the reality. And I think it's very important for us to pay attention to this case, come together as a community or different communities, whatever race you are. We need to all stand up for what is truth and what is justice. Okay. And in this case, I think it was not. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. President. We definitely have to get to everyone else. Jerome, man, final thoughts.
All right. I'll try to be quick. Just some other things that happened in court this week. Twitter has agreed to hand over details of people who post racist and anti-Semitic abuse anonymously in France. France will prosecute you for racism. And so Twitter has agreed to cooperate with the judgment and hand over the coordinates of those responsible for racist tweets. So France is handling that. And a hotel widower in New York who was sentenced to 5 years probation and 8 months of home confinement after she held an Indian servant in the country illegally for 5 years, her son called from India. The missing exploitive children kind of thing, and his mother was held captive for 5 years, and this woman got 5 years probation. And they paid her $26,000 a year. So that's what happened in the area of wealth. And one more, bail has been set for a $5 million Saudi Arabian woman who held someone for human trafficking for 12 years. Like, she's charged for human trafficking in up to 12 years because she held a 30-year-old Kenyan woman in her house. This is all this week. What's happening in the world.
That's in here in L.A. That's right here in L.A.
That's
serious about it.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, well, appreciate that, Jerome. Appreciate that so much. All right, Mr. L.A.S., man, Megan's the first and last word. Final thoughts, brother.
Jay, I don't know what's going on in the chat room. There's a lot of hate being spewed. I keep kicking people out. It's like recharged on the back end. So I apologize to our listening audience for that. But I'd like to say that at the end of the day, a young man has lost his life over something as simple as going to the store picking up something to eat and something to drink. At the end of the day, we don't need to riot. What we need to do is, as Jay King says, flex our muscles and stop spending money with the community. Because that's the only way. That's the only thing that they understand is that. If you don't spend money with them, then they'll lose out.
All right. And look, I gave my closing argument, so I think that'll justify as far as what's going on. So, Mr. Elias, man, if it's Sunday and we're talking serious stuff, what time is it, my friend?
It's time for the serious side of the Jay Wow Show.
Appreciate everyone who called in and participated. And for Jay King, for Dr. Francis O'Dea, Jerome, Mr. L.E.S., I'm Jay. And remember, if it is Sunday and we're talking serious stuff, it is the serious side. God bless everybody. Take care.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.